فیلم فقه از علوم شریفه اسلامی است.
فقه or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
Self-purification is the most significant fact
امامت یک اصل زنده است در تاریخ اسلام
امامت is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters in faith. Welcome to the program, Ulama Speech. In today's program, we're going to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Misbah Yazdi. Please stay tuned.
حوزه تمدن واقع میشه از حوزه فرهنگ نیست و بالعکس وقت سه تا مؤلفه اصلی میتونیم ما برای تمدن قائل بشیم
Establishment of any civilization's basis is not independent of the cultural foundation and vice versa. We can divide civilizations into three main components. First, social life. If life was individual as opposed to social, the notion of civilization would not exist. Second, believing in a kind of unity among these pluralities, abundances. Thousands of people make up a village, or we could assume that at some point the whole world of humanity would want to have unity. Billions of people must believe in some kind of unity amongst themselves. The third component is the opposite of it. While being united, their work must be divided apart, separated from one another. Everyone should have their own specific responsibility. Everybody participating in everything wouldn't result in a civilization. These are the main components of a civilization. Its relationship with the culture is also clear. Its relationship with the religion is also clear. Thank you so much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Ulama Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Misbah Yazdi. Until next time, we leave you in Allah's care.
around the world with reporters.
The government of Venezuela is ramping up efforts to obtain coronavirus vaccines to inoculate its population, despite the ongoing economic crisis prompted by a series of tough U.S. sanctions. Although Venezuela has so far succeeded in keeping infections fairly low with regular lockdowns, the nation is still facing many challenges due to Washington's harsh restrictions. In this context, Venezuelan Foreign Minister Jorge Arreaza has slammed the rich countries in the Americas, namely the U.S. and Canada, for hoarding COVID-19 jabs. Arreaza remarked that this harmful policy is depriving other countries in the region of enough vaccines. He said this is a tantamount to putting political and commercial interests above human rights. Venezuelan officials back Arias's argument.
Venezuela will fight legally against the monopoly that the U.S. and its allies are purportedly trying to establish over COVID-19 vaccines.
However, some opposition members have a different opinion.
If the U.S. and Canada have more access to vaccines, it is because they are democratic countries and Venezuela is not.
But experts say that Venezuela is in fact a democratic nation and deserves free access to vaccines.
Venezuela has the same rights to the coronavirus shots as any other nation, since politics shouldn't meddle with humanitarian issues.
While the Maduro government works to guarantee a proper vaccination process for all the Venezuelans, it also has to deal with a round of U.S. sanctions that hinder the access to such vaccines in the region. Jesus Silva, Caracas.
Palestinians in the Gaza Strip have held a sit-in in front of the Red Cross office to support Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails and detention centers. The move comes as thousands of Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to suffer from inhumane treatment and are being denied their basic rights, including access to proper medical care during the coronavirus pandemic. Last month, Israeli regime forces arrested 456 Palestinians in the occupied West Bank, including women and minors. Hamas movement demanded international protection for Palestinian prisoners.
Zionist practices against Palestinian prisoners violate all international laws and norms. We came here to express a united stance in solidarity with the prisoners. We call on all international organizations to intervene and protect Palestinian prisoners, especially during the coronavirus pandemic.
Currently, some 5,000 Palestinian political prisoners are being held in 24 Israeli prisons and detention centers. The plight of Palestinian prisoners has increased amid the coronavirus pandemic. Around 400 of them have been infected with a deadly virus.
We call on the International Committee of the Red Cross to help Palestinian prisoners who continue to suffer inside Israeli jails. We are deeply concerned over the prisoners who suffer from medical negligence. More and more prisoners are infected with the coronavirus because of the overcrowding and lack of hygiene products.
Securing the release of prisoners is a highly emotive issue for Palestinians, who regard them as prisoners of war and as symbols of resistance against the Israeli occupation.
Continuing the resistance is the key to liberate the prisoners, including by capturing Israeli soldiers to swap them with Palestinian inmates. We also need to increase solidarity activities to support the prisoners and highlight their suffering in Israeli prisons.
Solidarity with Palestinian prisoners has been a top priority for activists in Gaza, who say they are determined to stand by the prisoners for as long as it takes.
Latest statistics show that Israel has imprisoned nearly 1 million Palestinians since 1967. Currently, thousands of prisoners are kept inside Israeli jails, including women and children. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
The head of Razi Vaccine and Serum Research Institute says the Razi-CoV PARS vaccine will be an excellent option as it is the first injectable inhaled COVID-19 vaccine of recombinant protein. Dr. Eli Sari, speaking at a press conference, said the vaccine produced by the Razi Institute of Iran does not contain any elements other than the ingredients required for the vaccine.
The 96 years experience of the Razi Institute is the backbone of the Razi-CoV PARS vaccine production. And this vaccine must pass the relevant tests, and the media should assure the audience that the vaccine produced does not contain any negative side effects. Currently, Razi-CoV PARS vaccine has been prepared for human injection, which will begin with the issuance of a license by the Food and Drug Administration of Iran.
The press conference came only one day after Iran unveiled its second domestically made vaccine titled Razi-CoV PARS. Razi-CoV PARS is administered in three stages, two intramuscular shots 21 days apart and an intranasal administration 30 days after the second jab. Developers say not only does this protect the recipient from the virus, but it prevents them from transmitting the virus to others. Those who receive the CoV PARS vaccine will not need a mask anymore.
The country has the ability to produce all three types of the coronavirus vaccines, including those with the technology of Wuhan virus, inactivated virus, and mRNA. Razi-CoV PARS is one of the safest vaccines with very few side effects, and it will stop the recipient from transmitting the virus to others.
Domestic rival Iran's first homegrown vaccine, Coviron, is ahead in schedule and will start the second phase of the human trial next month. At the same time, Iran has imported the first batch of Russia's Sputnik V and will kickstart its mass vaccination this week.
The first phase of the human trial of CoV PARS will begin next week on 130 volunteers. Developers say the entire human trial will take some 5 months. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
After Coviron vaccine made headlines as the first viable Iranian-made vaccine for the coronavirus, another vaccine now grabs the spotlight, CoV PARS. Developed by Razi Vaccine and Serum Research Institute, CoV PARS is a protein-based vaccine. It employs recombinant versions of the spike protein, which tutors the immune system against the virus. This works with an adjuvant, a compound that puts frontline immune cells on battle alert to muster a robust immune response to the protein antigen.
This new vaccine works based on a recombinant spike protein. It's a proven method that has been around since 1980 and has been successfully tested on other diseases such as hepatitis. The first Iranian COVID vaccine used inactivated coronavirus, but this one works differently and can be injected or inhaled.
CoV PARS is administered in three stages, two intramuscular shots 21 days apart, and an intranasal administration 30 days after the second jab. Developers say not only does this protect the recipient from the virus, but it prevents them from transmitting the virus to others. Simply put, those who receive the CoV PARS vaccine will not need a mask.
The first two doses give protection against the virus and strengthen the immune system against the coronavirus. The third dose, which is administered intranasally, will block the virus from entering the upper parts of the respiratory system. Therefore, the recipient will not exhale the virus and those around them will be safe.
The first phase of the human trial for CoV PARS will start next week on 130 volunteers. Developers say the entire human trial stage will take 5 months. Its domestic rival, Coviron, is ahead in schedule and will start the second phase of the human trial next month. At the same time, Iran has imported the first batch of Russia's Sputnik V and will kickstart its mass vaccination this week.
With CoV PARS making its way to the human trial stage, Coviron now has a tough rival on its way toward the market. For now, Iran is a few months away from a marketable local vaccine. And until then, officials say Russia's Sputnik V will dominate Iran's inoculation program. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Iran has held a national exhibition to showcase its latest scientific and technological achievements on the occasion of the 42nd victory anniversary of the Islamic Revolution. In this exhibition, 160 projects on such fields as healthcare, agriculture, defense, electronics, oil, and nanomaterials were unveiled. 90% of the proposed projects have reached production phase.
In Ketuzan, we process chitosan, which is a sugar that is obtained from the hard outer skeleton of shellfish like shrimp. Our company has processed chitosan at three grades, which can be commercialized. Chitosan can be used in different fields like medicine, agriculture, textiles, and cosmetics, and etc. This will save the country hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Manufactured portable GPU or ground power unit, which is used to start the engines of light aircraft and helicopters. If you fully charge it one time, our GPU is capable of starting engines 9 times. This GPU can be used for devices which need high voltage.
Taiwan is a leading country in the region in terms of global innovation. According to the Global Innovation Index 2020 report, Taiwan ranks 26th worldwide for the share of its high-tech industries in the national production, surpassing the regional countries such as Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and Turkey.
At this exhibition, we are witnessing the emergence of new talents in our society. As you know, the enemies are trying to impose different forms of sanctions on our nation, but we have cut off the hands of dependence. We believe that sanction was one of the great historic opportunities for the Iranian nation throughout history. We have always stood on our own feet, and today the Iranian youth are moving the country on the path of independence.
According to the Scopus International Citation Database, the rate of scientific contributions of Iranian researchers to the world increased from 17% in 2011 to 31% in 2020, becoming the world's leading country in science diplomacy, with 14% growth.
In the past 42 years, Iran has reached self-sufficiency in many fields, including science and technology. And now it has become one of the leading countries in scientific achievements in the world. Sama Kujuri, Tehran.
Leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, says the country will return to full compliance with the 2015 nuclear deal only if the United States lifts all its sanctions first. The Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or the JCPOA, is the name of the nuclear deal Iran clinched in 2015 with world powers, including the US. But America withdrew from the accord under former President Donald Trump and reinstated anti-Iran sanctions. Now, the new president, Joe Biden, says the US will return to the deal, but Iran must first return to full compliance. Iran rejects this, arguing that it was the U.S. that exited the accord and breached its commitments. Ayatollah Khamenei says it is the definitive and irreversible policy of Iran that the U.S. should first lift its sanctions. The leader also says that it's Iran that has the right to set conditions on the nuclear deal, as it has fulfilled all its commitments under the agreement. The leader's comments follow calls by some Western countries to renegotiate the Iran deal and expand it beyond its nuclear program.
But I do believe that we do need to finalize indeed a new negotiation with Iran, and President Biden has a critical role. We have to address as well the ballistic missiles issues, and we have to address the stability of the region, and this comprehensive agenda is to be negotiated now.
Iran has time and again stressed that the JCPOA is non-negotiable. The country rolled back some of its commitments in May 2019, exactly a year after the U.S. pullout. Iran did so after the European countries in the JCPOA, namely France, Britain and Germany, failed to make up for the U.S. withdrawal. Tehran has repeatedly said its rolling back measures are fully reversible once other parties fulfill their commitments. Iran says the ball is now in U.S. court. It says President Biden should now decide on whether to continue the policies of his predecessor or choose a new path. Those policies by Trump under his so-called maximum pressure campaign have already been described as a failure, even by some of Washington's closest allies.
Afghanistan received the first consignment of COVID-19 vaccines from India under India's commitments to support the country and health sector. As officials say, the first shipment of the vaccine would be sufficient for only 3% of Afghan population. This comes as Afghanistan is still struggling with the COVID-19 amid shortage of medical equipment.
India
have been a great a partner for health sector of Afghanistan in the past years, and this time this is the first country with came out in the first line and support the health sector of Afghanistan by donation of 500,000 vaccines. For sure, these vaccines will be used for the health workforce, which are the first line people against war, for the war against COVID-19 virus in the country.
Afghanistan has already received different shipments and aid from China, Iran and the U.S. to fight the pandemic in 2020. As officials in Kabul say, those at greater risk will be the first recipients of these vaccines. But many have doubted such claims, saying the widespread mismanagement of the first wave of COVID-19 in Afghanistan has tarnished the image of responsible bodies, such as the Ministry of Public Health and some other bodies.
We expect the government to really vaccinate our brave security and defense forces, plus those who are involved in fight against COVID-19 first in accordance to the latest decree of the president. There must be no mismanagement this time.
The World Bank has allocated $100 million and the Asian Development Bank has granted $50 million to provide Afghanistan with the COVID-19 vaccine. Meanwhile, Iran and China are among those countries that have so far assisted the Afghan government in its fight against the pandemic and the different collaborative attempts.
Based on official figures released by Afghanistan's Public Health Ministry, over 50,000 individuals have been infected with COVID-19 so far. Nearly 2,500 of them have died of the disease. Syed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
The Palestinian leadership has praised the International Criminal Court for its ruling that it has jurisdiction in the Palestinian territories, allowing its chief prosecutor, Fatou Bensouda, to investigate Israeli atrocities, despite fierce objections from Tel Aviv. Palestinian Prime Minister Mohammad Ishtayi said the decision is a victory for justice, humanity, and freedom, and for the blood of the victims, namely the Palestinians and their families. The Palestinian Foreign Ministry also praised the ruling and said it's ready to cooperate with the ICC's prosecutor if an investigation is launched.
We urge the International Court and its chief prosecutor to immediately launch an investigation into Israeli war crimes against the Palestinian people. We have already filed several legal complaints against Israel with the ICC. We are now ready to carry out every possible effort to see Israeli military officials and settlers being prosecuted for their crimes.
The ICC's ruling, however, has angered the Israeli regime, as its Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu dismissed the ruling as a political tribunal, accusing the ICC for being a political body and not a legal institution. Israel has not joined the International Criminal Court, but the Palestinian Authority is a signatory since 2015. This means the ICC's mandate is to prosecute people, not countries, including those from states that are not signatories, and in this case, Israeli leaders, military officials, and soldiers who are accused of carrying out crimes against Palestinians.
I doubt that that will make such a difference in Israel, because if we know the nature of Israel and it's based on violence, based on the ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian people and grabbing the land of Palestine, because of that, I don't think that will make a big difference for the Israeli policies in the region.
The Palestinians have asked the court to look into Israeli crimes during its 2014 war against Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip, as well as Israel's construction of illegal settlements in the occupied West Bank and East Jerusalem, Al-Quds. The ICC's decision paves the way for the tribunal's prosecutor to open a war crime investigation. But the main question lingering in mind is that will the U.S., which has furiously condemned the court, allow prosecution of Israeli officials and forces over their crimes committed in the Palestinian territories? Mona Kandil, Occupy Ramallah.
U.S. military personnel deploying from the American mainland to bases abroad are bringing COVID-19 with them. In South Korea, more than 700 United States Forces Korea members have tested positive for the virus, raising alarms in South Korea.
Since Americans value individual freedom and personal liberty, they have tendencies to not adhere to South Korean quarantine guidelines. Therefore, in the case of Pyeongtaek, living with the U.S. military, there is a high risk of exposure to coronavirus.
U.S. Forces Korea soldiers have repeatedly flouted local COVID-19 precautions, including holding a large maskless party. In January, U.S. bases here issued shelter-in-place orders because of COVID-19 cluster outbreaks.
The U.S. Forces Korea Camp Humphreys said in a February 1st press release that less than 1% of its active duty troops had tested positive for COVID-19. If we compare that to how South Korea is dealing with the virus, it's 10 times more likely for a U.S. soldier on a military base here to have COVID-19 than someone in the general South Korean population.
U.S. forces here have begun administering the vaccine, although new cases continue to arrive on almost a daily basis.
It seems that it is necessary to thoroughly manage corona-confirmed patients through testing before entering Korea, and more thorough management measures should be implemented not only for the U.S. military, but also for South Korean employees on the U.S. base who have a lot of contact with people.
Meanwhile, South Korea continues to experience hundreds of new cases each day, with the rollout of a vaccine set to begin here this month. Frank Smith, Pyeongtaek, South Korea.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
Axel Jawadi talks about the various keys of life and has brought about this book to be a companion for the very famous Mafatil Jiran, where one is a tool or the keys for paradise, and this book, of course, are the keys of life.
The Keys of Life, a program designed to tell you that what Islam gives you will help get you home with joy and faithfulness. So, well, listen to
The Keys of Life.
The world is a very, very big house, many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up, we must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. My name is Sheikh Zaid Al-Salami. A few years ago, I started the course of wanting to commentate on a very important book that I believe is something that would be useful for everyone who reads it, and that is the book Mafatih al-Hayat, written by Ayatollah al-Uzma al-Sheikh Jawadi Amuli. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to continue, and I'm back now again, and I do wish to try to finish off sharing some important points that is valuable for all of us to learn about here in this book. We were talking about some of the common courtesies, some of the etiquettes, hygienic, public, things that we need to observe, not only for ourselves on a personal level, but also things that we need to observe as far as us representing ourselves in front of others. It could be in front of our spouse, it could be in front of our children, it could be in front of the general public. But all in all, as Muslims, there is a very, very strong emphasis on us being clean, staying clean, and doing things in these particular ways, you know. And what we are up to now is talking about adabul takhalli. Al-takhalli basically means relieving yourself, and it comes from al-khala or baytul khala. And baytul khala could also mean relieving, emptying yourself, relieving yourself. It also means a place of isolation, of seclusion, you know, where a person has a khalwa. They're secluded, they're isolated, there's no one around to see them, and they relieve themselves in that sense. Because something that Islam is very, very strict about is exposing your private parts to anyone other than your spouse. And therefore, when you are, you know, relieving yourself, you need to be absolutely certain and sure that there is no one else around seeing you doing that. Now, clearly, when we understand this, it does go against, you know, what we can see in public toilets around the world, you know, unfortunately. But, you know, again, this is something that Islam very much stands for, that you have that privacy in that, in those moments of you relieving yourself, whether it be urinating or whether it be a person defecating and doing number two, number one, number two, let's use those words from now on. Whatever the case may be, a person needs to be sure that they are never exposed to being seen by anybody else. We have many hadith that say that Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi was never seen in this particular situation. So nobody saw him when he went, how he went, where he went, and everything like that. And that's, you know, it's something very, very personal that someone wants to do.
Ayatollah Javadi Amoli, the author of the book Mafatih ul Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatih ul Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree. Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam, who has stressed out the reward for praying, has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
In any sense, you know, Baytul Khala, there are certain etiquette that does need to be mentioned as far as when you are relieving yourself. We all know that when you do enter into the toilet, it's recommended for you to enter with the right, with the left foot. When you're exiting, to exit with your right foot. Before you start, there's a dua. While you are relieving yourself, there's a dua. When you finish relieving yourself, while you're doing your istinja, there is a dua. While you're doing there is istibara, there's a dua. Now, let me mention the difference between istibara and istinja. So you have Baytul Khala, which is the toilet. Then you have takhalli, which is you relieving yourself. Then you have the istibara, which is what people need to do to make sure that they vacate, they empty the canals of the urinary canals, which is, you know, the kharatatul tis'a. You know how when men need to make sure that they remove the urinary canal after they have finished urinating, and that's called istibra. And then we have istinja, and istinja is cleaning yourself, washing yourself. Now we don't say washing yourself, because With number one, you only have one option of istinja, and that is it must be with water. But with number two, you have more than one option besides water. But it's always water is always going to be number one. But in the with the absence of water, or in the case that there isn't water, a person is able to use something that is hard and solid, like a stone or a rock or something like that. Whatever the case may be, I do remember that, you know, one of the things that we kind of struggle with in educating those who are not Muslim is why Islam emphasizes very much on washing yourself after you have relieved yourself. Well, besides the fact that it is cleaner, it's a form of cleanliness, it's more hygienic and everything along those lines, urine and feces are also najis as well. And the only way of purifying that najasa is through water. Inshallah, we will continue on in the next episode. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wa salatu wa salamu ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi tahirin.
Driving past, walking fast to the field of dreams. Hear the children's screams.
There was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time. Memories fade like a dusty window pane. And you can't see your past no more. The only thing that remains is that feeling of warmth in your heart that will always be there, be there.
Epic. Glory. Honor. This is Bahman, the month which reminds us of love and empathy.
An investigation would not for sure bring my kids back to life, said a survivor of an Israeli regime strike. However, I am certain that I need to continue to try to find some sort of justice. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Jessica Corbett, a journalist. This article is published under the heading, Better Late Than Never. Palestinians welcome ICC decision enabling war crimes probe of Israeli regime. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. Palestinian families and human rights groups are welcoming Friday, February 5th decision that clears the way for the International Criminal Court to investigate allegations against the Zionist regime war crimes, crimes against humanity, and the crime of apartheid in occupied Palestinian territories as a long overdue step toward justice. Given that the state of Palestine is recognized by the United Nations and scores of countries, though not the United States nor Israeli regime, is party to the Rome Statute, the ICC's pretrial chamber decided by majority that the court's jurisdiction extends to the territories occupied by Israeli regime since 1967, namely Gaza, the West Bank, including East Al-Quds. The ruling, Reuters reports, could lead to criminal investigations of Israeli regime. No probe was expected in the near future. ICC prosecutor Fatou Bensouda said she would now examine the decision and point it to the Israeli regime invasion of Gaza in 2014. Bensouda had said in 2019 that there was a reasonable basis to investigate the Israeli regime military for war crimes, but asked the court to weigh in on the question of jurisdiction. Despite uncertainty over how the prosecutor will now proceed, Palestinians who have lost family members and homes hailed Friday's ruling. Better late than never, Sophie Bakr told a reporter with the Associated Press recently while walking on the beach in Gaza, where his son Mohammed and three cousins, all under the age of 12, were killed by Israeli regime missiles in 2014 while playing soccer, sparking international outrage and condemnation. The most important thing for the investigation is to start. If it did not, then there is no justice in the world, Bakr said. The Zionist regime, which closed a military investigation into the killings, can't be the judge and the executioner, and I do not trust them, he added. We need the international law to do justice for us. Tawfiq Abu Jama, one of the three survivors of the Israeli regime airstrike in Gaza that killed 25 of his relatives in 2014, told Amnesty International that an ICC investigation would not for sure bring my kids back to life. However, I am certain that I need to continue to try to find some sort of justice. It is shocking to me that 6 years after I lost so many members of my family and my house, that impunity reigns supreme for those implicated in the tragic crime committed, he added. We can never achieve justice in Israeli regime courts. The ICC represents our only hope to achieving long-denied accountability and justice. Saleh Abu Mohsen, whose 17-year-old daughter Asel Abu Mohsen was also killed in 2014 as the Zionist regime forces bombarded Rafah, similarly told the human rights group that a probe by a Hague-based court remains essential to my understanding of what justice means. Before knowing about a potential ICC investigation into Israeli regime's crimes, I had resigned myself to the outlook that there would be no justice in my lifetime for the crime committed against my daughter, Asel, and against many other Palestinians. I must say that the only justice we will get is through the ICC, as no justice will be achieved through Israeli regime courts, he said. Victims like us have become faceless numbers, but it's time for our voices to be heard and for our suffering to be recognized. Saleh Hijazi, Deputy Regional Director for the West Asia and North Africa at Amnesty International, declared that the perpetrators of war crimes and crimes against humanity have evaded justice for more than half a century. And an ICC investigation is a chance to end the cycle of impunity that is at the heart of the human rights crisis. In the absence of independent and credible domestic investigations, an ICC investigation is the only way for Palestinians to access truth, justice, and reparations, Hijazi said. We call on all governments to offer their full support to the ICC as it takes the next steps toward accountability, including by standing up to powerful states who try to shield perpetrators from the full scrutiny of international community. The Israeli human rights organization B'Tselem also applauded the ICC ruling, saying in a statement, "The decision follows the facts of matter and brings hope towards an end for impunity. Further, we hope that the ICC decision will have a restraining effect on Israeli regime actions," B'Tselem added. Even before the investigation advances, for example, in preventing further attempts to forcibly transfer Palestinian communities, such as the ones we witnessed this week in South Al-Khalil Hills and in the Jordan Valley. While Palestinian Foreign Affairs Minister Riaz al-Maliki welcomed Friday, February 5th development, calling it a historic day, the Zionist regime Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu claimed that the ruling was anti-Semitic and vowed that his regime would fight this perversion of justice with all their might. Netanyahu's baseless claim of anti-Semitism sparked widespread criticism around the world. Juan Cole, a professor of West Asia and South Asian history at the University of Michigan, on Saturday, February 6th, called it the ultimate debasement of a term that has otherwise been central to human rights struggles. Haggai Al-Ad, executive director of B'Tselem, described the anti-Semitic baseless allegation as a moral outrage and argued that the prime minister has no moral standing. Ned Price, spokesperson for the U.S. Department of State, delivered the Biden administration's official response to the ICC's decision in a statement Friday. As we made clear when the Palestinians purported to join the Rome Statute in 2015, we do not believe the Palestinians qualify as a sovereign state and therefore are not qualified to obtain membership as a state or participate as a state in international organizations, entities, or conferences, including the ICC, the statement said. We have serious concerns about the ICC's attempt to exercise its jurisdiction over Israeli personnel, the spokesperson added. The United States has always taken the position that the court's jurisdiction should be reserved for countries that consent to it or that are referred by the UN Security Council.
وَقَضَى رَبُّكَ أَلَّا تَعْبُدُوا إِلَّا إِيَّاهُ وَبِالْوَالِدَيْنِ إِحْسَانًا
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
This type of right that Imam Sajjad alayhi salam speaks about in his treatise is the right of God, the right of Allah, Haqqullah.
For Humanity, a commentary on Risalatul Huquq of Imam Sajjad alayhi salam.
By Hujjatul Islam, Zayd al-Salam.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته and welcome to IRIB English Radio, dear listeners and for humanity, where we are discussing in this program the treaties of rights of Imam As-Sajjad Zain al-Abidin, peace be upon him. We're talking about the rights of the adversary, someone who has a claim against you. In Islam, we don't believe in conflict. We try to neutralize the situation when it does come to someone having any kind of hostility towards you. And this is exactly what Imam As-Sajjad, peace be upon him, is trying to teach us here in this particular segment of Risalatul Huquq. He's saying to us, you know, don't let things get to court. Don't allow things to turn into strong conflict between two sides. You know, try to use reason, try to use religion, try to use morals, you know, and don't lose all of this sentimental, these sentimental values that you have. Because, you know, it's just going to get worse and worse and worse. And that's why Imam As-Sajjad, after he says, وَكَسَرْتَ حِدَّتُهُ عَنْكَ بِذِكْرِ اللَّهِ, when you try to neutralize their hostility towards you by making them remember Almighty God, he then says, وَأَلْقَيْتَ حَشْوَ الْكَلَامِ وَلَفْضَهُ الَّذِي لَا يَرُدُّ عَنْكَ عَادِيَةَ عَدُوِّكَ. And that basically it means after you remind them of God, you are also going to be helping them reduce their fury against you. Why? By avoiding using any kind of indecent words or any kind of statements that are going to aggravate the person. You know, you're going to avoid any kind of superfluous and irrelevant talk or bad talk, because this kind of talk, la yaruddu anka adiyata aduwik, this kind of talk, when you're going to be saying bad things, when you're going to use indecent words, right? This kind of approach is going to make your opponent, is going to make your adversary even more aggravated. They're going to have more enmity and hatred and hostility towards you. Because, of course, this is the natural way of how it's going to happen. وَأَلْقَيْتَ حَشْوَ الْكَلَامِ وَلَغَطَهُ الَّذِي لَا يَرُدُّ عَنْكَ عَادِيَةَ عَدُوُّكَ. So you're going to avoid superfluous and irrelevant talk. لَغَط means irrelevant talk. Because such talk cannot remove the enmity of your adversary, of your or the person who is making a claim against you. It's not going to have any effect. Anything that you say that's extra, that's too much talk, that's irrelevant talk, you know, you have to tolerate this very much. And if a question is brought to court, make sure you check with your adversary, you check with your opponents. Because if you enter into the controversy, if you enter into this adversary, you are going to receive a lot of negative effects. There's going to be a lot of bad things that come out of this. And that's why the Holy Prophet ﷺ, he portrays a very beautiful landscape of how to deal with conflict between two sides, which left is the part of the man and the religion and wisdom, and the other side is the part of the world and society and the conscious and everything else. And none of this is going to become invalidated if this is dealt in this particular way. We're just going to go for a short break and we will be back very, very soon.
Dear listeners, you're listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. And while we were talking about trying to neutralize the situation with your opponent, with minimizing the damage that a person might have with someone that they are in conflict with, it's always very, very important to realize that this level of hostility is not going to get us anywhere, because a wise person does not spill their tongue into conflict with other people and doesn't lose their precious time in trying to aggravate the situation. You know, the Imam, peace be upon him, he says this with a lot of passion, and he says you need to prevent yourself from taking any hostility against you, you know, by avoiding bad things that are being said. You know, someone is not going to be hostile towards you, and you will be the one that benefits from this. If you do say something irrelevant, you're going to benefit absolutely nothing, and there are going to be many, many disadvantages that come out of that. So if you open your tongue in vain and you try to refute the false claim that is being attributed against you, and you become agitated and you lose your temper, then not only are you going to regret for what it is that you are doing, but it might also lead to that enmity becoming deeper and deeper, and your adversary having more hostility towards you. Unfortunately, the root of many mischiefs, many fitnas and seditions, many bloodshed, many corruption, many murders, many usurpings and plundering, and all these other bad things when it comes to people and society and property and things like that, are based on one's misleading their talk and not being observant of what it is that they say. And the opposite person, the adversary, taking things in such a way where they reverse this and they have hostility. And good language is going to lead you to goodness. And saying something good is always going to lead to positivity as well, from your side and from the side of everyone else. Whereas, if you were to say something irrelevant or say something inappropriate, it's going to be the seeds for many evil and many sedition, and it's going to expand and expand and grow and grow. So it's better for you to speak good words and stay away from bad words and never abuse, and always try to respect and tolerate. And if you do so, you will be successful in the outcome of what it is that you need to get to, even though someone is making a false claim against you. We'll continue on speaking about this particular segment from Imam Ali Sajjad's Risalatul Huquq. Until then, please visit us on parstoday.com, or you're able to email us on englishradio@irib.ir. And until our next program on For Humanity, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Allahumma salli wa sallim ala rasuli wa ali nabiyil azim. Allahumma salli wa sallim ala rasuli wa ali nabiyil azim.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.